My name is Matilda Zijena. Welcome to Walk the Talk, the podcast. This week, I sit down to another insightful interview with a young woman who is making serious moves within the Zimbabwean beauty industry. Carol Nyazika is an entrepreneur and the founder of Ndanaka, the beauty care range of products that include skincare, body, and hair care. She co-founded the African Women Association together with Lisa Chiriseri, and under that association, they launched the annual African Women Awards in 2015. She is also the author of an e-book titled 44 Secrets to Healthy Hair, where she shares DIY solutions for natural hair. She has achieved all of this under the age of 30. And to top all of those smarts, she is beautiful and so graceful. Carol is determined to take her beauty brand to the global market. Ndanaka is already available in a few African countries, and thanks to her strong digital marketing game, Carol has already started building an international client base. Listen in and be inspired as she shares some insights about her beauty startup.
Carol, you are an entrepreneur within the beauty industry. You are the founder of Ndanaka Beauty range of products that include skincare, body, hair care range. You co-founded the African Women Association with Lisa Chiriseri, and under that association, you both launched the annual African Women Awards. You are also the author of an e-book titled 44 Secrets to Healthy Hair. All of this under the age of 30. And to top it all those smarts off, you are beautiful and so grateful. Carol, welcome to Walk the Talk.
Thank you.
How long have you been in business, Carol?
Well, I've been in the business of Ndanaka for the past year, since 2017.
Yes.
But I've been interested in business for much longer, obviously. So, but Ndanaka has been only a year old.
A year old? Just a year old?
Just a year old.
It seems I've seen you on social media for the longest time.
Yeah, everyone says that, but it's only been a year.
Is that right? Mm-hmm. Okay, you were based in the UK for a few years. Upon your return, I read somewhere that you worked for an investment firm, and then you're literally qualified. Are you diversified? I mean, so how do you come from an investment firm? And again, you're qualified as a social worker. Mm-hmm. How does a social worker graduate come from that to the beauty industry?
Well, my journey in the beauty industry started way before I finished my degree.
Right.
I was on YouTube. So YouTube was kind of the launch pad, even though then I didn't really know that I was really going to go full time into beauty.
Right.
And then I worked for a makeup brand. I worked for a makeup brand that was entering the UK
right.
at some point after I graduated for about a year.
Right.
And then when you were saying that, how did I then go into an investment firm and
yes.
I worked for one of these subsidiaries,
yes.
was because everything from the makeup company that I was working for
right.
into the investment firm into now Ndanaka
yeah.
is because I was doing the marketing
okay.
for all those brands.
Okay.
So that's just how it came about. And because of AWA, the investment firm was actually a sponsor and they liked what we did with AWA and so forth. And they bought one of the companies, local
right.
companies, and they were looking to grow that company. So that's how I entered into that
right.
company. And then
yes.
from there, I got promoted into two of their other companies. So it was
wow.
just like a whirlwind of just
exactly.
growth. And
yes.
I was like, you know what? This is not why I'm in Zimbabwe.
Oh, so you already knew when you arrived
yeah.
where you were trying to get to.
Exactly.
You wanted to get into the beauty industry even then. Okay. You're a YouTuber as well.
Yes.
You've got a YouTube channel where you share beauty tips.
Mm-hmm.
Had you started this in the UK or did you start
in
after
the UK?
I
think it was 2011
okay.
or 2010. I can't remember. But it was literally because people kept asking. And I think that's when Instagram started
right.
and Facebook started gaining more popularity.
That's right.
But I was on Instagram before a lot of people on Instagram. And then I closed my account and then I went back and so forth. So
yeah.
from those platforms, people kept asking about my skincare routine.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just decided to just put it on a video. So that's how it started.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what was the first product you manufactured? And do you still remember who your first client was?
Wow, no. I think the first thing I ever created that I gave to somebody else was a face toner.
Right.
And I gave it to one of my colleagues.
Right.
Because she's like, oh no, I react to soap and all of this. I said, I don't wash, I just use water on my face. So I was like, oh, why don't you try these toners? And
right.
I was still in school, I was still training to be a formulator at
yes.
that time.
Yes.
So I was like, oh, just try this and let's see how it goes. And she really liked it, and then she kept buying after that.
Really?
And then I think after that, I created a face oil,
yeah.
the first version before this one.
Yes.
And then I gave it to my two friends, mm-hmm. And I made a face wash, but it was clay based, it wasn't a liquid face wash.
Right.
So I gave those to my friends, and they really liked it as well. So I think those are the first few people that I gave things to.
Wow, that's interesting. So you're an entrepreneur. As entrepreneurs, we are guided by the simple principle: one doesn't invent products, one solves problems. What problems do you think you're solving?
Danaga. I think people in Zimbabwe are looking for affordable products. They're looking
yes.
for products that actually work,
yes.
and they're looking for quality products.
Right.
So I think that's the problem that so that's a bridge actually that we're creating
right.
in terms of creating a good product and solving a solution of accessibility.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's pretty much what we're doing, because a lot of the time, if you want a quality product or product that works, you have to go through the bigger brands, which are expensive,
right.
or you have to travel to get those products. That means you can't get them all the time.
Yes.
So yeah. That's what we do.
And so you do natural hair products.
Mm-hmm.
So I would be your client, wouldn't
yes,
I?
You
I've
would.
Got a, and I see
yes.
your hair is natural as
it
well.
Is.
Was that intentional for you?
I cut my hair because I was studying AWA and I didn't want to be talking about African women and how proud we should be if I had relaxed hair or a weave or something like that. So
right.
I cut my hair so that I would be an example of what we're talking about.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I understand that, because I've got a company, my communications firm is called Identity 365, and I thought I must look like I've got an identity of some
yes.
sort. So I thought a unique natural look with a cut, I don't know.
Yes, you know.
Thank you very much. Your flag products for Ndanaka are your skincare range.
Yeah.
However, you have extended your range to now include body and natural hair care products.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about your products within your body care and hair care range.
Okay,
yeah.
So for the body care, we only have the body butter
okay.
right now, and then we're about to launch a body oil and
okay.
more products after that.
Right.
And then for the hair products, we only have the hair butter and the hair mist,
mm-hmm.
only because they work well. And knowing what our customers want with regards to something that works and that's simple, and you don't have to have so many products to just achieve a simple look. So
okay.
that's why we went for the two.
Right. Okay. And on your YouTube channel, which I went to have a look at because I needed to do my research, I watched one of the episodes and you mentioned that you personally manufacture your products.
Yes.
Do you have a team that supports that?
When I started, it was just myself,
mm-hmm.
predominantly it's just myself. So I do the formulation, obviously because I'm trained
right.
in the industry. So
okay.
I do the formulation, I do the research and the development, I do the procurement, I do a lot of the stuff, only because I wanted to make sure that it worked before I started employing people and being responsible for people.
Right.
So now in the second year, first year, we only had one person who was the accountant.
Right.
And then now in the second year, I think we've grown to 5 people.
Right.
But most of them are front ends.
Okay.
So it's mostly for my social media, so they're brand ambassadors
yes.
and so forth. But then for back end, I have like my household who help me with like labeling
of course.
And filling things up and stuff like that, just to keep it lean, because we don't need people every day. You
exactly.
know, and I just don't want people to just come and it's like, okay, but so what are you doing today?
Exactly.
So at least
that.
For my household, she obviously cleans the house and then she's doing nothing because I don't have kids
exactly.
or anything.
Yes.
So she's not doing anything for
exactly.
the rest of the day.
So,
so
she
I'll be like, okay, if you want to make more money,
exactly.
help me put
absolutely.
The labels on, help
absolutely.
Me disinfect and stuff like that. So she helps me.
Absolutely. You mentioned brand ambassadors.
Mm-hmm.
What sort of brand ambassadors are you looking for your brand, and how do you
select them? Usually we use people, or we work with people who've actually used the brand
okay.
Or who know of the brand.
Right.
And then we also work work with people that have a good work ethic. So yes. In terms of, okay, if you're going to be an influencer or content creator, yes. That's your job. That's what you're doing. So exactly. We're paying you for that.
Exactly.
You need to be creative about it and stuff. So we don't just pick people who just say, oh, well, I've got nice hair. It's like, okay, what else past that are you going to do to contribute back to the company?
Wow. Yeah. That's good. And the part where you provide extra dollars for your home health, that's amazing.
Yes.
You've also written an ebook titled 44 Secrets to Healthy Skin. Mm-hmm. And in it, you share a lot of DIY solutions to healthy skin and other solutions that you offer. How did you come up with these natural remedies?
Mostly from, well, because of my training and then research as well and things that I've tried myself.
Right.
So some of those things are actually on my YouTube channel. So I repurposed some of the content and just put it in an ebook because not everybody will have data to watch the
videos. Absolutely.
And then at least you can just have a reference on your laptop or someone to just go back and read or, you know, do some of the DIYs.
So. Sure. How long did that take you to write a whole book?
Gosh, it wasn't that hard. It wasn't that long. I think it took me... it took me longer to create the cover because I had to learn how to create the cover.
Did you create it yourself? You didn't get a graphic designer?
No. I literally just went on YouTube or something and then I was like, okay, I want to create an ebook cover, downloaded a few things, edited. So most of the time, I know how to do everything. So literally, the pictures on our website, everything, I learned how to take pictures, I learned how to edit, I learned how to do the graphics on my website,
wow.
On my social medias and everything, I learned how to record and edit my YouTube videos. I know how to do literally nearly everything that I need to get the job done, but then it makes it easier for me to then outsource when I now don't have the time to do it. So
exactly.
Right now we've got a content creator, so all my pictures and stuff are taken by my content creator.
Right.
But I tell them exactly what I want,
okay.
And then I'll tell them that, look, I used to do this in a day or two, so you have no
don't
excuses.
Tell me about a week.
Yeah, so
you know.
Don't tell me, unless you've got a heavy workload or whatever, but
right.
That also just helps me to know what people are doing, and
exactly.
They won't tell me that, oh, creating my graphic work is going to take X amount of time.
Exactly.
You know? So I think that's just what's helping.
I know, no, because, you know, creatives always tell you can't rush creativity.
Yeah.
So that's
but
always
if you're being told exactly what it is, and you're like, just translate what I'm telling you.
Yeah.
And sometimes, like, even my logo, I literally drew it.
Yeah.
And then I told the guy, like, this is how, I don't want it to look like this, but I want it to look like this. So figure it out. Like, okay, the N, I want it to be on top of the name.
Exactly.
You know?
I know what
it to
I want.
Be like,
yeah.
I want it to stand out when Danaka is not even there for people to know that this is a Danaka
so
icon,
can,
that
yeah,
sort of
exactly.
thing. So it was just knowing that, okay, this is how it should come out, but make it right.
Exactly.
You
actually
so,
understand.
Yeah.
You absolutely understand the concepts of brand, so
mm-hmm.
That's exactly right. So the next question really will not be relevant to you, but it may apply. You never know.
Okay.
How do you deal with self-doubt that comes with entrepreneurship?
Well, to be honest, when I started, and we sold out in 4 days when I started selling, right? So, but then for me, I knew that it was just a hype thing. Like, okay, people knew that something was coming out, and because of my presence on social media,
right.
People were kind of expecting it to come.
Yes.
But then
good.
The true knowledge of if the product actually is going to work or the validation of the product is when people were now reordering. So that's when I was like, oh, okay, I might have something. And then after that, we kept selling out. I was like, okay, now I need to revamp everything and grow and scale and so forth. So I think it's very important when you're starting to just know that you have to test what you have first.
Of course.
That saves you time, saves you money, and then it helps you know where to tweak. So I think for the self-doubt, I think it's eradicated when people validate what you're doing because you've tested it.
Exactly.
You know,
and then you've got that repeat customer coming back. So you've mainly used digital marketing to build your brand. Have you only used digital marketing?
I don't have offline marketing.
You don't do traditional, so, you know,
no.
radio?
No.
You don't have a
unless
billboard
asked,
out there yet?
Unless I'm asked to do an interview.
Yeah.
But no, I don't. No billboards, no flyers, no newspaper.
Yeah.
Everything is online.
Really?
Yeah. And then obviously our offline is now word of mouth from our customers.
And that is huge.
Yes.
That's huge. As a manufacturer, how have you been able to navigate the current environment in terms of, as it relates to currency shortages, procuring raw materials, and I think you do procure a lot of raw materials, and your operations in general in this environment?
Right now, because the good thing is that we have a very lean team, yeah. So it's not like we need to, have a huge profit margin to make up for paying our
overheads and stuff. Yeah.
And because I don't have an actual store, I'm in a retail store. So with that, it helps because I'm able to scale faster and go to different markets. So the different markets then pay for things that I need to bring in.
Right.
So that means whatever's going on in Zim is not really affected in terms of the pricing because I just get the stuff paid for by my international customers.
That's great.
Yeah.
Then you're able to procure and then bring it in. That is great.
So you just it happened faster than expected only because of the current situation. I think I would have wanted to make sure that my systems in Zim were operating at the optimum level that they could or be in all the towns that I can be in Harare. But because of the situation in Zim, I had to really think outside the box and meet demand that was coming from outside of Zim faster than I would have liked to, only because I needed a solution. So that was the best solution.
And you would have customers, a lot of customers internationally, because you're mainly on digital.
Yeah.
And I mean, the impact of being able to market your products to an international audience is something that I think a lot more Zimbabweans need to be aware of.
Yeah, but I think the problem with that is not logistics, because it's expensive to post.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the only problem that comes with trying to service outside markets, is because it's just too expensive, like to send it to South Africa or to send it to the UK or Australia or the States. It's just really expensive for that customer. So I think it's just finding a way to make it accessible without it being too expensive for people.
That's right. Absolutely. There's an old idea that women are in competition with one another and are constantly backstabbing. Has there been any sort of issues with you in terms of entrepreneurship and getting women to help you climb the ladder in business?
Not really, because everyone, all the retailers that we have are run by women.
Yes.
I think majority of them are run by women.
Absolutely.
So that has not been an issue, but then I think when it comes to other people who may be in the same industry, so maybe a competitor and stuff, obviously they're competitive, they're not really going to like you. So with that in mind, I haven't really had any issues. I think people are now more open to collaboration than before.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's amazing, because I've been late to join the bandwagon of women supporting or being your sister's keeper kind of mentality. I always was very hesitant, but now I realize that there's actually a drive towards that. And it's an exciting time to be alive and to be in business as a woman, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Great. You co-founded the African Women Awards in 2014, 2013? 2015. How are those awards performing?
They're doing well. I think the first 2 years they did extremely well.
Mm-hmm.
We were profiled by like BET and
Post,
and a lot of international media was very supportive.
That's good.
So we took a year off last year,
mm-hmm.
Only because we actually have the awards for 2 years running in a country, and then we moved to different African countries. So last year we were trying to see if we should go into South Africa or go to different countries. So hopefully this year we'll have another awards situation, but it all depends if we're able to get the sponsors.
I know.
It's outside of Zimbabwe, so it's
okay. Which country were you thinking about?
South Africa.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that'll be exciting.
Yeah.
Do you find that sponsors come on board? So you need to get sponsorship from South African companies, or you're really open to the African continent?
We're open to the African continent, but the only problem is that people are very specific about their demographic and so forth. So it's not, if you say, we're catering to the whole of Africa, they'll be like, okay, yeah, but I'm only in Kenya, so why am I bothering to be in Ghana when I've got no presence in Ghana or something? So it makes sense that when we're in South Africa, we get South African sponsors
to come on board.
Yeah, unless it's a sponsor that's in like South Africa,
multiple
Nigeria,
countries.
Exactly. It makes sense. But then most of the time, we just try and work with the current country sponsors.
That's right. It makes sense as well, unless if they're within the multiple places in the region,
mm-hmm.
Or the continent. So what advice would you give aspiring entrepreneurs about the startup space, especially In Zimbabwe. Where some people, I mean, really, some people have had to become reluctant entrepreneurs because there's very limited jobs on the market. What would you say to people in that space, the startup space?
I think it's different. In my opinion, I think it's different to just say you're selling something. You're going to find something and then you're just going to resell it, or you're going to rebrand it and sell it, or whatever. When I entrepreneurship, I see it as something that is scalable, and you're actually building something that's going to live after you.
A legacy, something that will live past you.
If you're in Zimbabwe, I think a lot of the time people, like what you're saying, go into entrepreneurship because it's a mode of survival, because there's nothing else that you can do, which is fine. But then it's like, okay, so are you going to stick to this for a longer period, and are you willing to actually be like, okay, I still don't have money, so in the next six months, I'm still not gonna have money because I need to put it back. Because another big thing that I've noticed is that people don't reinvest. So for example, for us, I've changed my packaging so many times, you know, in the past year, only because I needed it to be at a standard that I was comfortable with. And I've reinvested everything. Like, I still don't get paid, you know, and it's been a year, and I reinvest everything. Right now, we've got the ambassadors, we've got the team is going, I pay them if I even get paid. You know, so it's a situation where it's like, okay, you're going into business, but are you willing to make the sacrifices that are necessary for you to grow?
That's true.
So I think that's the biggest thing, and I think sometimes if you can't do something, just outsource it. And just find someone that you can trade with. So, for example, my accountant, when I started, liked the product. So I was like, I'll give you product, but you discount, like, remove the price.
Because I'm paying you.
Because I'm paying you. So if I'm paying you $500, you're going to remove $100, and I'm paying you $400. You know, so it makes sense for me. So that's how I was doing my barter trade, you know, in terms of when things needed to, happen. So I think if you're in Zim, I think being in a service industry in Zim, if you're starting off, is much more easier than trying to, like for me, manufacturing, because I have to import a lot of things. Whereas if it's a service-based business, like a salon or spa, you don't need to bring anything in. It's literally just you and your talent and your skill, and you get paid for that. Freelancing is also another easier route to go. So you outsource, again, your services and your talent. To people who need it, but then also remembering that you might want to get paid $1,000, but realistically, the economy in Zimbabwe does not allow people to pay you $1,000.
It doesn't.
You know, so it's going to be a time where you have to build. You have to build your portfolio. You have to build your expertise. You have to build your network. You have
to bring your prices down.
Keep your prices reasonable where people are not taking advantage. But don't expect too much and be like, oh, wow, you know,
I'm charging me
and this is what I need to do to survive and all this stuff. You also have to understand where the person is at that time in their business. Because for me, when I started, I didn't have a lot of money to pay, for example, my accountant. But now he gets paid more because now I can afford it. So if he had just given me attitude at the beginning,
you'd have moved on to the next person.
Then I would have moved on to the next person, and then he wouldn't be growing with me. You know, even my content creator, he started off as a customer. You know, and he kept saying, oh, Carol, let me just do this for you. Or he'll just send me pictures or stuff like that. And
what
I was like, and then I was okay, this now I can afford to pay you something, you know. So I think it's always just remembering, and I'm not saying that everyone's going to be growing, and you should just give off, you know, your skills and stuff because you're hoping for the
best. Not for free, but for growth, isn't it?
For growth, because you end up growing together and people remember you for that. And I just feel like sometimes when people grow too fast, too quickly, they get too big-headed, like, well, you know, I don't need to pay you because you need me. And, you know, I've been famous, or I'm now well-known because of X, Y, Z. It's like, that's not the point, you know?
The entrepreneurship journey humbles a person, right?
It does humble.
So really, if anyone needed to be humble, they should just get into entrepreneurship.
Because it really tells you, it teaches you, and it's like, I can't, the way you're seeing me right now, I can't be going downtown looking like this, you know? I can't be then saying, oh, well, I don't cross the Mormon shop. No. Things have to be done. So I have to strip everything off and go to Tanya Shona Chibuti Magadi.
Get your hands dirty. I know, I remember actually thinking, someone said to me, oh, we do brand activation for multiple brands in Zimbabwe. But when I have to get down and dirty, I go where I need to go to get the job done. Get into your flats and get moving and doing the work that needs to be done. There's no time for being discriminatory about work.
No, you can't. And you learn a lot from those people, eh?
Absolutely.
You learn so much, because the things that I didn't know, like I didn't know where to get certain stuff, and I was like, oh my God, where am I going to figure this out? And then I'll just go, not aunt, which I go, so I said, like, ah, makanda, makanai, where's the makanai?
And you'll find it.
It's always nice to learn from people. But so I think the biggest thing for me in Zim is that if you're not lucky enough, but if you manage to grow, and you grow fast, just know that, you know, you've got so much to learn from people, and not to burn bridges too early.
Absolutely. Yeah. That is so important. Thanks for that. What fail-safe beauty tips would you give our listeners today?
Wow. Fail-safe beauty tips. I think always exfoliate, because that means it removes dead skin cells from the surface of your skin. Right. Always use a good moisturizer. Always use the SPF.
We are not familiar with that.
Even when it's black cloudy skin? And it's cold, you really? Still need to wear SPF.
But why were we never told about SPF? Why was it never part of our growing up? It was always like a white
thing. I don't know, because when I was in school, we always had to wear hats.
Yeah, hats for sure.
You have to wear
but
hats.
But the creams that
but
come
the
with...
creams, I don't know why you were never told, but I think it's just an evolution thing. Like, we just learn as we go. Like, by the way, I can actually keep my hair natural, you know?
So, absolutely.
Oh, okay, now I need to put... I think you just learn. Absolutely. I think it's just one of those things.
Especially the idea of keeping your hair natural for black women. What a revelation, really.
It is.
I mean, just... back in the day, it was something that was so taboo, but there's such a wave and change. Everyone is appreciating natural, and I'm so excited. What mistakes have you made, do you think, on this journey?
Mistakes I've made.
And what have you learned from them?
I think from way back, even when AWA started, I think just having a contract in place. I think people forget to have contracts in place.
That is so
no matter who it is, your friend, your cousin, your aunt, your mother, whoever it is, you have
write
to have
it down
a contract.
And sign it.
Yeah, agree on it, because it's just a reference point. Like, you know,
absolutely.
People are not really going to stick to everything that you've put in there, but it's just
word.
A reference point if things really go left, you know.
To keep people accountable.
Yeah. And then I think another mistake that I made is I don't know, because I think I learned a lot from just previous situations, and also when I came back and I had my job, I learned a lot, like, you know, how to work with service providers and all of that stuff.
Right.
So I learned a lot from that. I think another mistake that I made was underpricing or undervaluing my products. I think that was a big thing, but then I think it also plays a part of validation, like what you were saying, like, you know, just that self-confidence. So I was like, oh my God, if I price it too high, will people actually like it?
Exactly.
And then later on, I was like, okay, look, this product is actually really light, and then people need to, if they like it, they need to really value it as well.
Right. Where do you see yourself in the next 5 years?
In the next 5 years, possibly in more African countries. Right now in Zim and SA, a bit in Zambia, and a bit in Namibia, but then I will be really established in those countries. I think it'll be more of an international brand that's coming out of Zim than just being a Zimbabwean brand in Zim.
Wow.
I think that's what it'll be. And then I'll have kids.
On a personal level, you'll have kids.
I'll have kids. I mean, we have to put that in there.
I know.
I'll have kids. Yeah. 2 years ago, I was like, I'll be married. And now I'm married. I'm like, I'll have kids.
When did that happen? I thought you were single.
Excuse my research. Well, actually, I don't know. It's not really out there.
Yeah.
I got married in December, the Lobola. But
lovely.
The white wedding is next. But I think I think people still think I'm engaged. The people say, oh, congratulations, you're engaged.
Oh, you're engaged.
Like,
no, but
no,
I've
that
been
was actually
married.
My marriage thing, you know.
Yes.
So I think, I think people expect it to be out there because I'm on social media a lot.
I didn't find it anywhere.
Yeah. So
I'd have loved to see the traditional look, you know, because everyone has got the traditional get up for, you know, your Lobola situation, which is quite trendy and exciting.
It is.
Finally, scientist Marie Curie, believes that we must believe that we are gifted for something and that this thing, at whatever cost, must be attained. What is your gift? What are you gifted in, Carol?
I think I'm gifted in creation, I think I would like to say.
Yeah.
I think I'm good at growing things. I think that's my major thing, because if I look back, from when the company came into the UK, I helped grow that whole process. And then when I came back and I was working for this company, we grew the subscription from, I think, from 200,000 to like a million or something in the short time I was there. Right. So I think, and then even starting Danaka to now has been a growth. So I think my gift is knowing how to either grow brands,
yeah,
grow businesses to an extent,
yes,
but creating that value with something. So for me, my gift would be giving people good products that actually help.
That's good.
And then growing their confidence again, growing their self-esteem, growing, you know, so I think it's just growth.
Yeah.
And then it just spreads out to a lot of situations.
Absolutely, I would have to say this. No, it is actually true, because like I said to you, I felt like Danaka has been on the market for the longest time. So you've really done well in terms of growing it and creating visibility for the brand.
Thank you.
So well done to you.
Thank you.
Carol, that was an insightful interview. Thank you for sharing your story. It no doubt will inspire someone.
I hope so.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you were indeed inspired by Carol Nyanzika's story. Follow Carol and myself on our various respective social media handles to find out how you can access the Carol's Danaka products and get updates for myself as to who our next podcast guest is going to be. Until next time, make sure that you walk the talk in your life. You never know, I could be interviewing you anytime soon. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Carol.
Thank you.